Let us pray. Dear Father, we thank you for this meeting and your purpose for it. We know that when we gather together, you always have a divine agenda. Our prayer today is that your will be done at this meeting. Take what we have prepared and multiply our efforts as only you can. Steer our intentions to align with your righteous will. Keep love at the forefront of our minds today and the guiding light for all we set out to accomplish and celebrate. These things we ask in your Son Jesus' name, we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Stand for the pledge. I
pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That brings us to our public comments portion of the meeting. I'd like to remind everyone that if you would, to please stand and state your name and address and for the record. And please limit your comments to 3 minutes. This is, of course, we're having a public hearing tonight, but I just wanted to make it clear this public comments section is separate from the public hearings, just to clarify that. So if in the public comment section, obviously you can speak about anything that you would like to speak about. When we get to the public hearing, that'll be a little different issue.
Are you ready?
Yes ma'am.
Good evening. I am Vivian Clark, primary of 1430 South King Street, Windsor. I stand before you again with a concern. It's not just my concern, but coming from me, it will possibly be considered as hearsay, but when I received the concerns, they were from the people who were affected. And the concern is, and I'm sure you've heard it numerous of times, with our Department of Social Services here. The reputation is not the best from people who have applied there to work. And it's getting to the point that it's rather embarrassing when you go to a meeting and somebody in that meeting is going to bring up the word or the name DSS. People are saying that they're qualified applicants who never get to be interviewed, or if they are interviewed, they don't get, as I often say, that Dear John letter, which is, in business practices, it's expected. I've had people who have gone there for services to come back and say, oh my goodness, there's so much tension there. You can feel it, you can see it in the air. One lady said to me that she was waiting to see her case manager, I think this is what they'll call, I'm not sure, and there were two employees just passing each other, stopping to converse. They saw their supervisor or their director coming, and they split like kids do, as if they were caught in the wrong. I am asking you to please look into these concerns. I'm sure I'm not the first person to stand before you with these concerns. There is a problem. I don't know from where it begins, but there is one. And to keep the morale high from the employees there, I think it's important. And when you go to Raleigh with your concerns, of course they send it back to our county manager and to the commissioners. I've not gone to county manager with the concerns, but on some of our conversations, I'm sure that I will speak to him further. I thank you so much for listening, and I am hoping that my comments will be well received. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Anyone else? Just to remind you, there will be another public comment section at the end of this meeting. So, in light of anything that's said in this meeting, somebody would like to make comments, there'll be a time for that.
If you got just a second for me, I don't need to go over there. I just want y'all all to know that this past weekend that I brought some glory to Bertie County.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I did. I went bowling in Fayetteville to the Pro-Am. I'm 74. I bowled 9 games. I come in first place.
We gotta get the newspaper to pick up on that.
You're my hero. All right. That brings us to the. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am. Sure. Yes, ma'am.
How's everyone?
All right.
My name is Lisa Bond. You see, you need my address.
Yes, ma'am.
103 Carter Park Lane, Windsor, North Carolina. And of course, I'm a citizen of 13. I can back up what Ms. Vivian Clark said. I work at Bertie County Social Services. I have a degree in criminal justice. And I've applied for multiple positions there. I was actually an office assistant there for 4.5 years. I tried my best to move up. The only reason I stayed in office assistant at first is because I have a special needs daughter. I didn't have anyone to watch my daughter. My mother worked at Purdue for 43 years, and she finally resigned. She finally retired. And once she retired, I had that support to watch my daughter for me to either become an income caseworker or a social worker. I applied. The first time I applied, there was 2 positions available. The director there did not choose me. Being working there all those years with a degree, don't even need a degree to be an income support caseworker, okay? Then I applied again, I believe in October of 2018. When I applied that time, she didn't even acknowledge me. She didn't come to me and tell me she received my package. I had letters of recommendations in there, all of my credentials, my state out, everything. Heard nothing from her, as well as my degree. Nothing. No letter. Didn't come by and say anything. So I've even gone to Mr. Scott Salwa and talked to him several times at the courthouse, just to voice my concerns and just let him know, you know, what I was going through. And he was a very nice man, and he listened to me very well, or whatever. But I got tired of it, because I have a degree, and I know that, you know, my bachelor's degree may not be as much as a master's and all, but I wanted to do something with my degree, or whatever. And so I applied elsewhere, and I applied to Plymouth. I have to pass Bertie Social Services every day to go to Plymouth to do something that I could have done. Mr. Cliff Hardison, who's the director over there, is an excellent director. I promise you, I've only been there for 3 months, and he has come to my office today because I applied for a social worker position. And I didn't get it, and the only reason I didn't is because the young lady that is there has been there for years. She chose to go into that position. He came to me personally and told me that I qualified, and the only reason he didn't get the position to me because he follows the laws and give the most qualified person the position. And I definitely appreciate him for that. And he encouraged me to apply for the 2 positions and become an open because he felt that I am qualified. He said he knows that I'm qualified. So if I can qualify for a social worker 3 position, why couldn't I get an income maintenance caseworker position that didn't even require a degree? And so I know what she's talking about. I was there. You knew I was there because I talked to you a lot too, and I suffered when I was there. And I can tell you right now, I'm happy. You have to look into those directors. You have to. You have to. You have to look and make sure that they are doing what they're supposed to do. Because those workers there is what's keeping social services going. Without those workers, social services is nothing. Cindy can't do the job. She can't do the job by herself. She doesn't even know a lot about the jobs. And I'm not here to bash her, but I'm telling you all the truth. I know because I work there. I pass every day when I could be working right in Bertie County doing for the citizens here in my county for a county that I don't even know the people over there. I feel terrible leaving my daughter here, special needs with my mother, passing by this job every day to go work for someone else that I could have been doing at Bertie.
So thank you.
I just wanted to share that.
Thank you. Anyone else? Commissioners, do you have anything to say? Lonnie, any comments?
I would just like to say, as far as commissioners, we are, as we know, we are not over social services. It is the state that's over social services. We are, we pay some of their money. It was the responsibility of the state over the director.
Commissioner Wesley?
I don't think so.
Okay. That brings us to the public hearing part of this agenda. And the county has advertised a public hearing this evening for the first reading of the proposed road safety and maintenance ordinance prepared by the county attorney. Before we open the public hearing, I'd like to ask the county attorney to speak on this and maybe explain or brief the people here on what this means and explain it probably a lot better than I can.
It is it's proposed ordinance which deals with private roads leading to two or more dwellings. It doesn't have any application to any, for example, farm road leading in the middle of a farm. If adopted, it's structured upon the general abatement of public health, nuisance, and danger, which is in NCGS 153A-140. Counties have substantially broad powers to remove, abate, or remedy anything that's dangerous or prejudicial to the human health or safety or public health. The ordinance presupposes that not being able to get emergency vehicles back to two or more residences is in fact harmful to public health or safety. There is not a case anywhere in this state exactly like this. However, ordinances adopted by county finding that it had the authority to cut people's grass if it was more than 10 inches tall is under that ordinance, and that's been upheld. You can close a private pool if you want to, if you determine that that's a danger to the public. What the ordinance attempts to do is as leniently as possible, I think, but you know, you can always argue about wordage, but it tries to make certain that the private roads be passable. Passable basically is defined as being free of such obstacles or holes or other problems which would cause the bottom chassis of an automobile to come in contact with the ground or water during non-extreme weather conditions. Since we have vast and bad experiences with hurricanes, unfortunately, there is a provision in the ordinance as proposed that would deal with those exceptions when it's exceptional weather condition. The ordinance can't enforce. An owner of a private road, whoever that might be, under the ordinance would be notified if it is termed or deemed impassable by the enforcement officers, and they would have 45 days to come into compliance. All ordinances of this type require the right to notice, the right to appeal, and ultimately the right to appear in court. If somebody did not obey the ordinance, assuming that it was adopted, which I'm not here advocating one way or the other, they would be subject to a civil penalty of $1,000 a day until they fixed it. And of course, the county would also have authority to go in and seek abatement, repair the road, and whatever the cost of repair would be to the road, could place a lien upon the property of whoever owned the road. I think that's a quick and fair statement of what it says. Okay.
We've come to this point of this public hearing after a lot of years of commissioners realizing that a problem exists with the roads in the county. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not the least serious part of this problem is that emergency vehicles sometimes are find it impassable or impossible to get the people who need help. It's one of the problems. But the commissioners have been working on this issue for a long time and, you know, maybe having a little trouble finding a solution, but they all, I think, acknowledge that there's a problem that exists, and especially since this started a long time before, or the commissioners started working on this problem a long time before I got here. I'd like to give the opportunity for each commissioner, if they would like to to make a comment or say something before this hearing started. This Baysmore will start.
Okay. I'm sure what I have to say, some of you will not want to hear. As far as the road ordinance, I do think that there should be something to make the road passable. But as far as charging the landowner $1,000 per day, then putting a lien on their home, I think that's a big extreme. I believe we need to go back to the drawing board and work on another avenue on how to settle this other than trying to put a lien on someone's house and charging them $1,000, because if they can't fix their road now, and then you add all those fines and take the lien, I don't see where we're benefiting. And I really don't think the county is prepared to take on this as far as the manpower to fix the road and to keep it up.
Commissioner Wilson.
Yeah, well, I recognize that there can be different opinions on the part of sincere individuals. However, I believe that this ordinance is not only needed, but it is the right thing to do at the right time to do it. I've been a commissioner now for going on 7 years, and I've heard from day one, citizens come in here and complain that they bought a lot on a road, and when they bought that lot, that road was in great condition because the seller was selling lots. And over the years, since they didn't own the road, they had no authority to work on it, but the landowner refused to do it. When I was elected, all of us, we took an oath to represent the citizens of this community in terms of the safety, their general health, the whole works. I take that oath seriously. And I believe that if you benefited from selling lots on a road, you have that responsibility, if you still own that road, to keep it. We didn't say pave the road. We said keep it so that it is passable, accessible for public safety measures. And we have had some glaring instances in this county where citizens literally almost lost their lives because we could not get to them in a timely manner. And we're not just talking about a few little mud holes and something like that. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about impassable for fire and safety, EMS and police vehicles to get back there. That's a whole different standard. So I believe that, and remember when we talk about the cost, what this ordinance says is that that landowner will be given an opportunity to prepare to fix that road so it is passable. And if they don't do that, then the county would step in, but the county would pass the cost of that on to that citizen in the form of a lien. So, and that citizen has the right to, you know, to take this to trial. If he believes that his road is passable and we say it's not, they can argue that. If they believe that we don't have the right to enforce this, they can argue that. But to say that it's not that person's responsibility to the citizens who live there, no, I think it is that person's responsibility. And we should hold them accountable. And that's our job. And this is a safety ordinance. This isn't just a nice to do or something like that because we want it to look pretty. It's not what it's about. This is a safety ordinance. And I think that we have a responsibility to make sure that citizens live in a safe place where they can be, you know, get the services that we provide to all citizens of this county. So I'm in favor of this ordinance, and I plan to vote for it.
Thank you. Commissioner Lee.
thank you all for coming. I feel the same way as Commissioner Baysmore does about this issue. I've also done a lot of research. We've been talking about this ever since I've been elected, And I've done a lot of research along the way, talked to a lot of commissioners at different meetings that I've been to and to see what they're doing. Macon County had a similar ordinance. They lost their first three court cases where the landowners took them to court. And they lost those first three court cases, and so they did away with the ordinance. I've got email from two UNC staff members, UNC School of Government staff members, that say the ordinances, it doesn't fall under the nuisance abatement. So there's no general statute that says that we can fix roads. Counties are not in the road business. Brunswick County has a statement on their website that says we are not in the road business. Counties are not to be in the road business. So I am concerned about that person that lives at the end of the road, at the end of the path that our ambulance can't get to. But I can't rule with my heart. I got to rule with my head. And I got to follow what the law tells me that I can do as a commissioner. So that's where I stand.
I agree with Commissioner Weston, and you know what he said reflects my feelings so closely. I'm not going to waste your time with just trying to put all that into my own words. I mean, he kind of said exactly what I was thinking. I would like to ask Attorney Smith, if it's appropriate, Mr. Smith, maybe if you would address that $1,000 a day, because I think that maybe sounds scarier than it is in reality. Well, and maybe also the second thing is your opinion on how enforceable this is.
Well, it's $1,000 a day. There is, in fact, it's up to $1,000 a day for the violation continuing. Probably we would suggest that the court seek an order, county seek an order of abatement from the court instead of imposing a civil fine just because it accomplishes the same thing. And nobody can tell you with any certainty as to the enforceability of almost anything. I have lost cases you couldn't win and won cases I couldn't win and vice versa. It just happens. I'd say, and this one, we've had three lawyers, in addition to our three lawyers, look at it. We feel like there's a above 90% chance that it's enforceable. I feel very comfortable going into court arguing this simply because, and I've read the blogs, and I can truthfully tell you, primarily I'm a trial attorney. I'm not an institute of government attorney. I've tried to write many cases, and the only case I ever lost for y'all was one institute of government told me it was absolutely impossible to lose. So I tend to lead with my gut more than maybe I ought to. But, I feel like, 9 out of 10 times you would win this case for several reasons. One is that there is a presumption in favor of county activity. And two, the imposition upon private property in this case has to be weighed against the public safety if I was making the argument, and the argument is the imposition is small compared to someone's life. Now, if you were taking these people's property or if you were forcing them to bring it up to DOT standards, I tell you it was absolutely impossible and it was illegal. I certainly see both sides of the argument. And if I can take the liberty of pointing one other thing out there about this, and I'm not advocating for this ordinance one way or the other. That's not what I do. The passage of an ordinance that is of this nature requires a unanimous vote on its first reading of all the commissioners, not just all the commissioners present. So if you vote 404 or 04 against it, you ain't got a complete table here tonight. So whatever you do is subject to when you get five people back together. It requires entire boards sway the first vote. Like if you voted tonight, it's not going to pass properly because you don't have five people. So it would be, based on what y'all said, I can add, so it looks like it might be 2-2. Well, if it was 2-2, then if that happened, and I'm not saying it is, I wrote down everybody's comments.
There's no point in voting tonight.
Well, that's up, yeah. It's up to y'all if you want to vote now. I'm telling you that within 100 days of holding this public hearing, the first vote has to be unanimous. The second vote does not have to be unanimous. It can be 3-2, 4 against, however it goes. So I just wanted to interject that.
Thank you. Just to clarify this for me, does there have to be two votes?
There's going to have to be two votes no matter what. It doesn't have to on the statute. If Mr. Trent were here and y'all voted 05 or 5-0, it would be done. You know, 5-0 vote against it, it'd be done. 5-0 vote for it, it'd be done. If it's not passed by a majority, by a unanimous majority, then it can be brought back up anytime within 100 days upon motion of any one of y'all, duly seconded, and then then the majority vote will control. That's just for your reference. So that's in section 153, capital A-45, which is the adoption of ordinances. And I don't think we've ever had, I don't think y'all have adopted an ordinance of this type. You have maybe, Mr. Wesson. I think you go back further. Maybe y'all have, but I don't believe so. So I was just letting you know that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just want to say one thing. First of all, you know, there's certainly nothing in the general statutes which says that we cannot do this. There's nothing that says we cannot do a public safety ordinance. I want to be clear on that. Nothing that says we cannot. Now, matter whether it's upheld in court of law or not, if a citizen chooses to do that, that'll determine it. But let me say one thing about the fine and the fee. What it says specifically is if that road owner does not fix their road, then they would be subject to that kind of fine because we would fix it and do it. Well, let me tell you this. We're not talking about an awful lot of roads in this county. We're talking about a handful of roads, and most of them we already know about. And every one of those landowners pays their taxes. Not a single one has not paid their taxes. So I don't know how we've reached the conclusion that if we add this lien to their tax bill, that they wouldn't pay it. Certainly, nobody wants to lose their property. I've spoken with one of the landowners in my district who the road is terrible. And this person is in the road fixing business and refuses to do it. Not because he has because he doesn't have the money, not because he doesn't have the equipment to do it, because he said, well, it was passed to me by my father, and he kept it up. When he kept it up, he ain't here no more. I don't have to do it. But he does have to do it because he owns it, and he gets the benefit of it. So I said, yes, he does have to do it, and we should enforce that right to protect the citizens who live on that road. So, and we also know that we're probably going to have a split vote here, but we also know that our chairman, who's not here today, has clearly voiced his opinion on this case, and he's in favor of it. So I think we'll have a determination soon, if not tonight.
Did you not say that all five of us had to vote? Is that not what I understood?
There's the
five of us present.
The entire board, I mean, some boards are bigger than yours, some are smaller, whatever the number. In our case, five people have to be there. On the first reading of the ordinance, in the first vote, it requires a unanimous vote by every single one of them. And then let me give you another example. Again, just assuming everything y'all said, and again, I'm not advocating on that. If Mr. Trent were here and y'all had a vote and it was 3-2, it would not pass. It would have to, within 100 days, be brought back again.
But because he's not here, there's no point in us voting because he's not here. Five of us need to vote on it.
Well, you can go ahead and vote if you want. If somebody wants to make a motion, you can vote. I'm just telling you, under the law, you can't adopt it tonight. If all four of you voted for it, you could not adopt it tonight because of five members of the board.
I just want to make it very, very clear. All of us on this board believe the road should be passable for EMS, law enforcement, whoever, to go down the road. But I don't believe in taking someone's land to do it.
That's right.
All right, we can go on to
the hearing. We've got a unique situation. I'm a new commissioner, but I've been on the board for a long time, and we all agree that there's a problem that needs to be fixed. We just can't completely agree on how to do it. So that brings us to this portion of our all. So let me just to clarify one thing, Mr. Smith. Hypothetically, voting tonight will really not change anything. It won't do anything. We don't have to vote tonight. The hypothetical.
Hypothetically, you might have to vote tonight. Now, however, at the first, let me make sure I brought the statute in and make absolutely certain on this.
I read it the same way you did.
When it is first introduced, in other words, when somebody makes a motion and the countdown starts after you hold this public hearing, within 100 days, if somebody makes a motion, you don't have to do it tonight, say your first meeting next month, you made the motion, it would require a 5-0 vote or not. I mean, at 5-0 to pass it.
Gotcha.
Okay? And then at any time thereafter within the 100 days from tonight, which is basically 3 months, you don't hold another public hearing, you just have a vote and the majority rule, 3-2, one way or the other, or 4-1, whatever the vote is.
Yeah. Everybody, make sure that I heard you correctly. Again, I want to be clear. Yeah. So if we vote tonight, if I make a motion and we vote, and it is 2-2, that's not unanimous, obviously. So the clock starts running then, right?
Yes, sir. That'd
okay, so opinion. I'd like to make that motion that we vote tonight for the special reason that we don't have to wait until another time to take a vote that likely will not be unanimous and that will put us off even further to taking a vote. So if we take a vote tonight, then it won't be unanimous, but the next vote will determine what we do. So I'll make the motion that we take a vote.
Mr. Wilson, I'm not trying to run your business, but you need to have your public hearing before you do anything.
Oh, okay. I got you. Just be here from the citizens.
I thought all five of us had to be present to make that first vote.
All five of you have to be present and voting. For example, if all five of you were present and one of you went to the bathroom, which is actually happened, there's a case on that, is not unanimously passed. All five of you have to be sitting in the room and vote on it when it's first introduced. Now, that's up to y'all when y'all want to do that. I don't tell y'all how to do things. I just try to tell you the best.
He's not saying we can't vote. He said to be unanimous, all five of them.
Yeah. But I don't know what the point is tonight.
The point is you don't delay it. You wait the next time. You still have to, can't be unanimous. You have to wait another period. Stop. The clock starts now if we vote tonight. The clock starts now if we vote tonight. If we wait, the clock starts when we wait. So why not do it now so the next vote will determine and get it over with? We've waited on this one.
I thought it started anyway after the public hearing.
It does. It's 100 days is the period, but the first vote, whenever that first vote is, Mrs. Lee, has to be, whatever the total composition of the board is, it has to be unanimous in favor of it for it to become law. Only thereafter, still within the same 100 days, could you then gather a majority, like 3-2, 4-1 vote in favor, or the opposite way, kill it, I guess. Does that answer it? Maybe?
Are y'all comfortable with moving
on? Motion on the floor.
Okay. All right. I guess at this point we need to open it to the public comments section of this. Is that correct?
Yes.
So at this time is just to clarify. Is there any time limit on this on these comments in this public hearing? There is not. Okay.
I want to speak up.
Yes.
Wayne Pierce, 108 Pierce Lane.
Yes, if you would.
I pulled the sheriff out 2 or 3 times on my road. And I ain't asking y'all to pay for my road. Take my little bit of tax money and fix it a little bit. That's all I'm asking. I've been paying taxes for 40 years, ain't never asked for a penny. I've been told by commissioners, y'all don't take other people's money and fix other people's road. I ain't asking to. Take my money and fix it. Our little bit. I mean, what have you done with my money for 40 years? I'm just stating a point. You bought all this property on the river. Can I go down there fishing? Help me out. Thank you.
Here I am again. Vivian Clark. I am in total agreement with each of you
as you say that these roads do need to be repaired. Cannot argue with you there at all. But I am questioning the way that you are going about trying to get these roads repaired. I'm wondering how much research have you really done to try to find, as I believe Attorney Smith said, to find, or could have been Atkins, I'm not sure, to find the best means to do this. I'm in agreement with Commissioners Bazemore and Lee that to put liens and to charge $1,000 per day is absurd as far as I'm concerned. Of course, you don't care about how I feel about it. In my research, I cannot find a road maintenance ordinance close by us, some of the surrounding counties. I've been searching really hard, can't find it. Secondly, in my research, I've gathered that on some of these roads, many people live on these roads who receive the Housing Choice Voucher Assistance, formerly Section 8. I've gone to some of these housing authorities to ask how they would handle the situation if they had recipients of these Housing Choice Vouchers, Section 8, living on these roads, what would they do? It's totally up to the Community and Action Agency that distributes these vouchers. One county said that if they had a family living on one of these roads and they needed to do an inspection and the inspector could not get to this dwelling, they would withhold payment, same as they do if this owner does not repair its residential dwellings. I'm wondering if you have gone to the, I won't say trouble, but if you have asked our Community and Action Agency how they would help in this situation. It's certainly, I feel, worth a thought. Let's not get the appended social services, but let us, the county, not get the name of being so willing to take the properties of some of those of us, should I say. As one friend of mine often says, I don't have a dog in the fight. I understand now what that means, but I am speaking on behalf of some of these owners. Some of these owners perhaps don't care, as Commissioner Weston said, but there are others who do. And some of them have worked really hard. Some of them may now be entrusting the maintenance, the care of these roads to someone else who, maybe I pay you, but you don't come to do the work. I'm old now, so I don't see these things. So there's much that I think can be looked into and not to be done so hastily. And again, please know, if I lived on one of those roads, or if my mom lived on one, Sheriff Holly could not get his team down there, or EMS, I would be all, oh my goodness, I probably would go ballistic. So I do understand, not questioning that these roads need repair, but it's just the way that we're going to find the funding to do so. Are we, as Verde County, going into the road fixing business? Thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Paul. And we do care what you say.
Thank you.
My name is Terry Pierce, Pierce Lane in Thomasville Lane. We have letters from Sheriff Holly that he was tired of his police cars bottoming out in the holes. We have one from the rescue squad, Mitch Cooper. I've got REA Marshall Cherry. I have Ricky Spivey. REA got stuck and went down there to work on a meter, and they had to call in a great big wrecker, so REA had the cost of that wrecker just trying to help themselves. We have MediaCom, a letter from MediaCom. And we now have two school buses, 137 and 211. Berkeley County buses are now going down that road and turning around in our driveways. So I feel like if they're going to use our roads with their buses, they should at least be able to help us out. All we want is a ditch on each side of the road and a jugging. If y'all have ever rode down there, there is no jugging. This is off the school road. There is no jugging at the end of that road. If a jugging was put there, and a ditch cut on each side of our stuff, and a motor grader, that's all we have asked for. We've never gone in for paving or any of that.
Ms. Pierce, can I ask you a question? Have you seen any DOT workers down there working on either side of y'all's driveway on Pierce Lane? I talked to one of the gentlemen with DOT, and he said they were going to be going out there and cleaning out. He said the way the road slants, that there's a jugging is not necessary, and the way the road, the water flows, at y'all's road, the water flows in each direction. But they were going to come out there and clean out the ditches so it would flow better.
But it's bad.
He had to wait for the rain to stop. Y'all haven't seen anybody?
Okay. It can't flow downhill when it ain't. It going uphill. A jugging would let it go down. It ain't a jugging that, so it's got to come out of the ditch, run across the end of our path, and then back in the ditch. Then, you know, there's no jugging for that here.
I'm just telling you what he said.
Go down the hill. I went down there.
Your lane is the only lane without a jugging on that whole school road.
Two ladies down there in their 80s all the way down to the end of Thomasville, and the rescue squad, there's no way they could get down there to her now.
Pierce Lane wasn't bad, but Thomasville was rough.
Because it's pure clay.
Thank you.
Hi.
Good evening.
My name is Jerry Callen, number two, and I'm from Mary Hill. Pass that around to them, I'd appreciate it. I think she's right. I think y'all are right. I think we've got a problem, and it needs some very serious thought and consideration. Mr. Smith, thank you very much, because I was prepared to sit here and read General Statute 153A45. I'm a little concerned that Mr. Trent is not here tonight.
He had a family.
I feel, has the first reading of this ordinance taken place yet? That would be my big question. And that goes to the ordinance, or does it take the motion to set that in order? Has the ordinance been read officially?
The ordinance has been publicized. Once there's a motion, then it will have been deemed to have been set in motion. But to answer your question, has it ever been read before? Just to put this in context, the first time that this particular ordinance, and this may be some historical interest, was ever discussed by any board was March 26, 2012. And every year the boards have worked on different iterations of this ordinance, but the ordinance has never been introduced before.
All right, thank you. So, I rise tonight. I'm against this ordinance as it's written. Page 13 of your full agenda has a handwritten note on it that said reviewed by BOC April 4th, 2016. I can only assume that BOC refers to y'all being the Board of Commissioners. But I've received an education tonight that that review doesn't count as the reading of the ordinance. Page 10 of your full agenda shows the statute that's been read tonight. I want to make it very clear This is a public nuisance ordinance, not a public safety ordinance. It's been said that this is a public safety ordinance. It is a public nuisance ordinance because it talks about overgrown. Again, down inside of your full agenda, you have information that talks about overgrown lots. You have information that talks about swimming pools that are a public health hazard. You have information that talks about chronic abusers and people that should close up their mosquito-infested swimming pools or deal with them in some way. I feel as if this is a right-of-way issue, and we're turning it into a criminal issue with fines and teeth in this ordinance. I feel like if somebody owns land and they have a right-of-way, then that's between that landowner who is landlocked and the person that owns the land and are paying taxes on that piece that gives them the right of way too. I feel as if that is a civil action to be taken by two property owners. Or it should have been worked out in the deed of sale to begin with. And if the road had always been there, who took care of it in the first place? There's a thing in emergency services that don't touch the hazardous material because if you do, you own it. So who touched the road last? Be careful because you might own it. I feel as if there's way too many teeth in this ordinance. Far, far too many teeth. And to have a general nuisance ordinance, when the public's not invited onto that private property, onto a private road, how is it that we can have a nuisance to the general health of the public? And there's probably a no trespassing sign sitting at the end of that road. I know the ordinance says two or more dwellings on the road. And a dwelling doesn't have to be occupied according to the definitions of that ordinance. It can be a vacant house or a hunting lodge. At this time, I don't have a dog in the fight. But I can foresee a time coming that I may. Y'all are about to adopt an ordinance that is going to affect our children and our grandchildren. And without thought to remedy or variance, you're basically creating zoning within the county. That's the next step, is to zone our county, residential, farm use, commercial, whatever. I realize there's zoning in towns, but this is just wrong. Section 203 of the ordinance talks about the enforcement officer. The sheriff, honorable man. We don't know who's coming behind him. But rest assured that the sheriff is answerable to the public through elections. The emergency manager, again, honorable fella, I like Mitch. Who comes behind him? He's not accountable to the public through any kind of election, but you're putting a lot of authority in his basket. You're putting authority in his basket to deem a road impassable or to deem a problem. Section 402A says all private roads must be passable for all vehicles defined in Article 203. That could mean a Dodge Charger or Ford Taurus going down a road that normally Sheriff Holly would take his four-wheel drive pickup truck. Some folks down the end of these roads know that they need a means to get in and out. My next question comes in 402. If the sheriff is the enforcement officer under what I think is a civil action, how does that affect your ability to collect evidence if you see something going wrong? How does that affect your ability to obtain a warrant later on with issues? You've got serious Fourth Amendment rights that are being brought up here. Section 501, after 45 days, the county may fine the property owner $1,000 per day until it's fixed. I think we'd all have a little bit easier, I think this would go down a whole lot easier if there was a time limit that said for the next 10 days, that's a $10,000 fine. And I realize it says up to, but you'll never convince me that when you start going into fines, oh, it's a $50 fine. It could be a $50 fine, but it could be a $1,000 fine. Who determines that? I don't know the answer to that. And I really do feel like somewhere down the line, you're talking about foreclosing on people's property. I don't remember who said it, but somebody can't keep up with their road now. They get these fines, you take them to court. What happens next? The court says, fix the road. The county says, okay, we'll fix the road. We'll hire somebody's construction company to come fix the road. And when that happens, the lien goes on the property. Okay, well, there's the right of way. The lien went on it. I'm not paying it. It goes into foreclosure. I lose the property, the right of way, but the foreclosure, the lien, the sale of that property doesn't cover the cost of the bill. I'm still on the hook for the rest of the lien. You can take my house that has nothing to do with the property that is in question. It's wrong, folks. It's seriously, seriously wrong. Y'all talked a little bit about there's a few roads that have been identified already. Open up your full agenda and you're going to find 9 pages of roads that have already been identified. 9 pages. Page 28, full agenda. Page 28 of your full agenda has a blog article that says nuisance ordinances are generally not enforceable outside of city limits. Granted, this is speaking to overgrown lots, but that's somebody's opinion. Generally, nuisance ordinances are not good outside of that. And the other thing that I'm concerned about is the absence of Commissioner Trent here tonight. I realize that he may have some unforeseen emergency, some problem, something may have come up. But had he been here, y'all would be required to vote 5-0 to pass it. And barring that unanimous vote, it would have failed. And would have had, if I understood it right, would have had to wait 100 days to be reintroduced. I may be reading that wrong. I may not. Yeah. Within 100 days of quorum being present, then they could vote a simple majority. Is that correct? So regardless of whether they're all here tonight, the only way it was passing tonight was 5-0.
That's correct.
Thank you. So at any point in time, I'm sorry if Trent... Mr. Trent is of the persuasion of Mr. Wesson and Mr. Atkins. I think this ordinance is going to be passed. But I would only ask that you address the teeth that are in it. You got to file them down. You got to make it more palatable. It's got to be more friendly. If I have a road and there's a pothole over here and you can go around it to the left, go around it to the left. I mean, I don't know what some of these people are living with. Have no idea. I don't know what prompted it to come up at this time, other than there's been complaints of road problems. And so, anyway, I'm sorry. I know I took more than 3 minutes, but I thank you for your attention, and you've got a copy of my statement. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Earl Adams. I live at 107 Thomasville Lane. I just want to clarify some of Mr. Cowan's comments. There is no sign at the end of our road that says no trespassing. One thing. But other thing, not everybody in this world can afford a $75,000, $80,000 four-wheel drive pickup truck. I own a Mustang, and my Mustang bottoms out every time. But I should be able to drive what car I want to drive. The road should not be in the condition that it is in. And there's no avoiding a pothole. I was just bigger than a pothole. Ms. Pierce spoke earlier. She had to go out in her property and put up 2x4s and rope and cinder block because some of our neighbors are driving through her yard to avoid the hole. She has standing water in her yard as long as there's water in the road. But I bought them out every time I go through. There's no way to get by them. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Tim Baysmore, Jr., 340 Cedar Landing Road. I've heard all the comments that everyone said, and I would have to ask you all to just stop, pause, question yourself for a minute. We're in one of the poorest counties in the state, and we're talking about living in somebody $1,000 a day. However, a few years ago, my father owns a number of trailer parks, and he fixed the roads pretty good. School buses came down the road and tore them all to pieces along with the people that were in and out. The roads became impassable a couple of year before last. He was 95 years old. He asked us, me, to help fix his road. We fixed his road. However, I want to tell you, fixing the road is far more costly than making the road initially brand new. Juggins, ditches, rocks, what have you. Now, we bear the cost of debt. I also would ask you to look a little further. There's a development right off Wooded Road, where, as I understand it, whoever sold all the lots to various landowners, they sold them all. And the road is just there. The person that sold him, he's gone. I believe he's maybe left to some relatives, and they didn't care anything about the road. And as I understand it now, all the people who live down there, or maybe just a few, they chip the kitty, they buy the rocks, and some other grave road. Now, you also have these private mobile home parks that someone has for profit. And they desire not to fix the road and get whatever they can get out of it, and the road is impassable. One other scenario that we have in this county that you may not be aware of, there's a gentleman who owns a home, very nice home, who has a right-of-way that goes to a gentleman's farm. And there's someone else who has a farm farther back, a home farther back, who have to go through the same place. Now, to two individuals, their road is fine. The farmer who has to give the right-of-way, he only has tractors to go there. But his tractors didn't tear up the road. But the road belongs to him. So who are you going to find? The people who own the lots in the back, their road is fine. So I would suggest that you look strongly at what you're about to do. I listened to the county attorney. He said, if you have someone with a bad swimming pool, and I think septic system is safe, you close it. So rather than take somebody's land or set them up to lose whatever they have, and of course everybody's familiar with landlord prevention agency, close it or find some other alternative method. Allow the people in there to fix their own, but assessing $1,000 to fix a pad per day, it's a hardship on anybody. We didn't fix ours in a week, a day, or a month. We did it a lot of times. Would that have been $60,000? Really, it took us over 60 days to do it. Would we have been left at $60,000 and we were working on it? And then the other question becomes, who says this road is not passable for this vehicle, whether it's a Mustang, as the young lady said, or it's four-wheel drive? And then you have to make sure, if you condemn my road, what about your road? And my road's not as bad as your road, and then you got another mess all over the county. So why do you want to do it? We need to think about it. We need to go back to the drawing board and find a better way to do this. Now, just this past Saturday, there's a rather wealthy gentleman in Martin County who called me and said, Tim, come down Tommy's Lane, take a look at it, see what you're gonna charge me to fix it. On this particular lane, they have exhausted all avenues, means to get this road fixed. He have 5 lots. There's probably 30 down there. Nobody's fixing it. He's got to pay for it. But other people, the road belongs to nobody. And you're gonna run into those same circumstance somewhere in this county. And what are you gonna do? You're gonna have another mess because you didn't treat somebody fair. And you took the land that probably somebody's ancestors left. So let's do some more research. Let's ask some more questions. Let's look at some more scenarios. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, here I come again. Come on. Yeah. Brenda Cowan from Murray Hill. Yes, I'm in 147 on Murray Hill Road. I just have 2 statements. This appears to me, and I feel sorry for you. I tell you, when people have a bad road, they need to get it fixed. Bring a lawsuit against the landowner. Get that road fixed through the courts. It's a civil matter.
The landowner is deceased.
Pardon?
The landowner is dead.
Somebody else owns it.
His heirs.
Okay, so the heirs.
But they don't have money.
That's their problem. They can come up. Hello? You think they want to come up with $1,000 a day? That's what I'm talking about. You sue them until you get your potholes filled. Hello? Nope. I mean, that's kind of simple. I've got a question. Can each of the county commissioners, each of you, affirm that in no way will you benefit from this ordinance? It's come to my attention that some may have connection with some developers. I don't know. Hey, maybe it's one of them things that comes out on whatever, but I think each commissioner should be able to say, I will not benefit in any way or manner.
I will not benefit in any way.
Oh, okay. But, and also, hey, when you skin one cat, you can skin a lot of them. There's going to have to be 5 people in order to vote this in one way or the other. why don't you two just lay out when they get them?
Good idea.
I mean, you know what, Miss Simple?
We can't do that.
You can?
Yes, we could, but we won't.
She is funny, but she can sing, too.
Oh, you don't want to hear it. But anyway, I mean, you know, that it, to me, it's simple. If you really and truly don't want to get a pass, don't show up at the next meeting. And you will never have five people present. It will never pass. Period. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sue them and put them in jail. We've got five facilitators. Thank you very much. Just a little common sense. Common sense.
Great.
Not at this time.
Yes, I'll laugh. I'll forget all the people.
Good evening. My name is Jennifer Mitchell. My husband and I own the property in Hetzelina. However, I'm not here for myself tonight. I'm here for my mother and the other residents from Pierce and Thomasville. I've listened to everybody, and everybody probably has pretty good opinions, but it is a safety issue. When you have letters and the sheriff is confident and the emergency coordinators are confident enough to write you a letter in the fire department, they're not going to write a letter at random to anybody. But if they're confident enough to write a letter stating that this is a safety concern, then you got a problem. Whether or not we want to admit it, Bertie County's changing. And we got to change with it. You have several residents that live in these areas that are affected. And me, as Terry Pierce is my mother, if it's affected, rescue squad get to her for a life situation, you will have a problem with me. Because I pay my taxes just like everybody else. And it is proven beyond a doubt. With that, she's got a stack of letters, probably this tall, and pictures, that it is a legitimate safety issue. Whether it's like one whole lot of people or not, I can't help it. It is a legitimate safety issue. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Dick Bryan. I live on 132 Sockets Lane. And the problem that we have, like Mr. Bateman was saying, our problem is, I've been back there since 1985. Most of the property is owned by property owners. And we are in a situation there at 132 Cypress Lane that we have, when the world gets to the point that it's so bad that we just have to chip in and do what we have to do. Never got any assistance from the board, nobody. I'm speaking on a concern about this because I have a sick child. And the ambulance service comes to come back there, it'll be back there 5 times last year, pick my son up. And they have to creep to go out and come in and pick him up. And two of the time, he really needed to get out, get you to the emergency room in a timely fashion. Now, I don't know where 132 Soxers Lane falls under. I don't know if it's under your district, it's under you. What's what?
Where is it?
132 Woodrow.
Woodrow, yes, my district, absolutely.
Okay, have you been to down Soxers Lane?
I know where it is, yes, sir. I know where it is, but I have not, I cannot say.
So you never been there?
I can't say that I have that specific road.
Okay, well, you might want to make a trip down.
It is not on our list.
It's not on the list?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
But let me.
If it's not on your list, so in other words, y'all not even going to think about doing anything.
No. The list is only the roads that we thought were the worst in the county. The worst. Now, so that means there's a whole lot more potentially worse than that. But this is not inclusive.
And again, just what you were saying a while ago, who makes the determination which is,
That's clear in the audience that a public service official
who's in charge of the EMS, along with the sheriff, along with the fire department, will determine if a road is not passable for them. Just like you said, if the ambulance can't get to your son, you want the road fixed.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do.
Okay. That's all I want. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Vernon Lee, 2940 Wakeland Road in Coleraine. I'm kind of like Ms. Clark. I don't think this has been thought through. I know it's been talked about for a long time, but I think you need to do like she said and step back and take another look at other ways it could be done. From what I'm hearing, the sheriff, the EMS manager, and all of these other people are going to make a determination as to whether a road is passable or not. I've sat in court enough to know probably the first thing the attorney is going to want to know, what type of training have you had, Sheriff Ollie, to determine the passability of a road? Mr. Cooper, what training have you had? What makes you certified? You know, have you gone to DOT classes or whatever? Then it was also said that, well, if at the end of the 45 days, the person had to fix the road, then the county is going to go in and do it. Is the county going to buy a motor grader? Has the county talked with anybody that fixes roads? Have you done anything along those lines? Because the 45 days, when it ends, then what are you going to do? Or have you even thought that far? Or are you just rushing to try to get something done that's not right? And taking people's land, like several others have said, because the paths are not right. I was with the Sheriff's Department and I served many, many papers back on Mr. Baysmore's father's land. Today, if it's really, really rainy, and some of the people that live back there that have four-wheel drives or four-wheel off-the-road machines run up down the road and tear it all to pieces, it's not passable. But if he goes a week later or 2 weeks after it dries out and fixes it, you know, what determines when is it impassable? I know Mr. Baysmore. I've seen him many times on his tractor running up down there scraping the road. And you go back there a month later and it's tore all to pieces again. Has the county thought about that? You know, if you get a motor grader and you go back there and you grade the road, how long is it going to stay like that? You going to put rock on it? You going to put sand on it? What are your plans? Or do you have any? You know, it's got to be more than just, let's get this done. Stop. Think about what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
My name is James Lee. I'm at 544 Mile Island Road. And just like everyone else, I've been listening. And I came in a little late, so I'm concerned. One is, I hear people talking about taking property so that you can develop a road and keep it up and all. But my concern when I heard about it come in is using taxpayers' money to maintain a road for a private property. And I'm not sure if that's what you're doing or not. And then listen to the gentleman here, I don't know his name, and Ms. Clark, and then Mr. Baysmore. I just echo that it sounds like some more research need to be done to come up with some, hopefully some other ways of doing this. Because as the county grow and people move into these areas one lot at a time, and it becomes a community, but no one planned for a major road to service them, who's working on that to make sure, you know, this stops so you don't have to do this anymore? So my only recommendation is that I wish that you take another look at it and see if you can come up with some other ways of taking care of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, I'd like to give each commissioner an opportunity to speak on a lot of what we've heard tonight. If we're good on the road, Ms. Baysmore, would you like to say anything?
Just in closing, I would like to thank the citizens for their input.
Certainly I've learned some things. We even have roads that maybe possibly should be there that's not up there. And everybody have their own case. And more time and study should be done, given to this ordinance.
First of all, I'd like to thank the citizens who came in and spoke on both sides of the issue. But let me say this. If you are a lot owner, you don't have the authority in the state law to go and fix anybody else's road without their permission. And to ask a lot owner to fix the road of somebody else who owns that road and pays taxes on it, to me, is not fair to the citizens who purchased a lot there, unless it was part of the agreement they had with the property owner. It does seem right to me that if I bought a lot on a road, that the person who owns that road is the person who is responsible for fixing that road. They are profiting from it. They sold the lots. They are profiting from it. It should be their responsibility to fix it. We're not talking about fixing anything to DOT standards or anything. We're talking about fixing it so where it's simply passable. And we describe what passable is in a road. And I hear a lot of talking about, oh, we're going to, you know, the county's going to be, you know, taking over people's, you know, property and homes. Wait a minute. What we said clearly is that we first ask the landowner to fix the road. If they don't agree to fix the road within 45 days, yes, the county will step in and fix it and will then assess that landowner that responsibility for paying that. That seems like the right thing to do. It's their responsibility in the first place. They didn't do it. Our responsibility as a board is to protect the citizen who live on a road because they are not responsible. Our job is to make sure that people who are responsible do what they are supposed to do. The last thing I'll say, when you tell me to study this more, Ms. Clark, you've heard that we've been studying this since 2012, and we have looked at what other counties have done. We've talked to the LGC, we've talked to DOT, we've talked to everybody. The only way that we have of making a landowner take care of their road is through an ordinance that says, this is your responsibility, landowner. Do it. We'll give you the chance to do it right yourself. But if you don't, we've got to protect the rights of those citizens who you sold lots to, who you benefited from.
Is this protect your them. Idea? It seems that you're taking comments rather personally.
No, not at all. I'm just saying, I want to let you know that. I want to let you know that we have studied this since 2012.
But your results are not very beneficial to the residents of this county, sir.
I disagree with that. I think that's exactly what our results are.
Yeah,
of course it is. And yours to disagree. But what I'm saying to you is that we are here to protect those citizens whose responsibility it is not to fix that road. We're here to protect them.
Sir, please, no. We are all saying, yes, we agree. These roads should be repaired.
And who should repair
yes,
them?
They
and who
should be
and who should repair
but
them?
But I really think that there are other means that you can find that would offer a pleasant solution to those being impacted by these horrible conditions and to those of us who are on the other side of the coin looking at the decisions that our county commissioners and our county managers are making to resolve these. This is all we're asking, sir. It seems that you are set on, yes, this is going to happen.
Ms. Clark,
and it probably will, but I can tell you this, you will probably have a lot of people who, when it's time to vote again, they'll remember
My job is to do what I believe to be right for the citizens. I'm not worried about
why
who votes
really
for me and not vote for me. Because, Ms. Clark, because we have listened to it, and no one, to my way of thinking, has offered a solution to us as to who
well,
should.
You ask. I've been back 2 years now. I've not been pulled into a committee to, hey, come, let's sit and talk. Let's break bread together and discuss this.
I guess you're not being heard. What I'm saying is that I believe that we should require the landowner of property, the owner of that property.
In doing so, find a fair way. And those, as I mentioned earlier, if you are earning income from renting residential dwellings and receiving subsidies from the government, if there is something that those distributing those checks can say to the owners of these private roads, hey, if you don't fix the road, your income is going to be cut. I guarantee you, some roads will begin to get graded or something, whatever.
And I'll use that same logic that you just used. If we enforce those landowners to fix it, they'll fix it because they don't want to have to pay the penalty and they don't want to have a lien put on their property.
If you've been working on this since 2016?
2012.
How many meetings collectively and individually have you had with the owners of these properties, sir? What other responses that I can go someplace and read? Yeah, we talked to them and they signed this document or this waiver? I would like to know. As I say, I've been back now 2 years, January 31st. I don't remember too many people. The only thing that I ever heard was on Pintail Lane Drive, I sent my sister Melvin driving, and they came to you to ask to fix their road because the owner who sold the lots didn't do as he promised. Said you couldn't do it. You didn't have the money to do it. But now we have money.
No. We didn't say we didn't have the money. We said we didn't have the authority under the existing law. That's why we formed the ordinance, because we didn't have the authority without the ordinance. The ordinance gives us the authority to require that landowner to fix it. And the fine, if you want to say that, it doesn't mean that we're going to fine every person $1,000 a day.
How do I know that you're not?
Well, I guess it, you
is
know.
Is it right?
No, it says up to. And it also says that they have 45 days to agree to fix it. If they agree to fix the road, you think we're not going to let them fix it? Of course we would. That's what we want in the first place. But if they don't want to fix the road, then we should require them to fix the road. It's as simple as that.
You're saying one thing, but when I read that road maintenance ordinance, you said that there was a word subject to the fine.
Yes.
I can't remember reading that word. But again, I don't have a photogenic memory. So I'm sure I lost something. And I'm a little bit heated right now, so I think the best thing for me to do is to zip it. Thank you so very much for this opportunity.
So, my turn.
May
yes.
I ask a question? I yep. hear her and you and everything, and I really see, it from all sides. I really do. This doesn't affect me. It really does. But if you keep going beyond that point, okay, 45 days of not fixing, you bring someone in to fix it, they're not going, how is he going to pay those fines? He didn't have the money to begin with. She said they don't have the money to fix her road.
I heard what she said, but they pay the tax on it every year. So they have the money to pay the tax. This would be assessed as part of that tax bill. And I don't see a single person on any of these roads right now who has not paid their taxes. Everyone has paid their taxes and continues to pay them. I believe they will continue to pay them if we assess that fine as part of that, because they won't want to be charged $1,000 a day. That is what, and teeth, yeah, we do need some teeth. We need teeth to make sure that they do it and do it quickly so that they won't have to pay that fee.
Okay, but what if they say, hey, here it is, you take it.
That's fine.
What
that
are
right.
you going to do with it? Then you're going to have to fix the records. You become the owner at that point.
We'd probably sell it to someone else. But yeah.
Right, so my turn. So I thank you all for coming. I heard you loud and clear. Many of you spoke about stopping and taking another look at it, and I couldn't be in agreement more. I told you I did a lot of research. I've done it since it first started and after I got elected. And at our last commissioners meeting, I told the commissioners about Cleveland County. Cleveland County has a unique ordinance where they loan the money to the road owner, and they, through reimbursement of that loan, they fix it to DOT standards. So then, once it's at that DOT standard, DOT takes that road over. Then it's no longer a headache for anybody. It's working very well for Cleveland County. They're fixing 3 or 4 roads a year through this loan process. So it's not taxpayer money. There's nothing against ordinance General statute has not changed. We still do not have authority under general statute to do what we're going to do under being fixing roads. The lawyers have fixed it so it's a safety, and so the we'll wait and see if that holds up in the court of law. Mr. Cowan, I heard you say that it's more nuisance.
It's a nuisance ordinance.
Yes.
Not a public safety ordinance.
Yes. So I heard that loud and clear also. So thank you for participating in your government tonight. It's wonderful to see all these people sitting in the audience. So thank you.
Is there anyone else? I entertain motions. To
did we go into a motion?
No, to close the hearing. Did you close the hearing? Is
that what we do? Yeah, okay. You just declare that closed.
Okay. If there is no one else, then we'll declare this public hearing closed. No, do we entertain motions to?
No, just continue on.
Just go on.
All right. Next on the agenda, we have Ms. Joanne Jordan, addressed to Relay for Life.
I'm back. Thank y'all.
We're glad you're back.
Thank you.
I'm sure I can speak for everybody on that one at least.
Well, I come before you again. Thank you for allowing me to come back to you tonight for Relay for Life of Berkeley County. And this does, as you have been talking about, affect all of our citizens. There's nothing in that you do in our county that's not in some way, shape, form, or fashion that's going to touch everybody in Berkeley County. So for that, I thank you. I think before you in your packet that you have proclamation to approve for 2019. We are in the process of scheduling working on our schedule for our 2019 relay. And that's going to be Friday, May 17th. It's going to be at the Roy Vaughn Stadium at the former high school. We have the track that has been approved. It's going to be from 6 till midnight. So please mark that on your calendars. We would like a commissioner to say a few words at our opening ceremony when we honor all of our survivors. I do have some forms that I'm going to leave that if you can make copies and pass out to in your areas for everybody that's here, for our commissioners and those involved. We want our survivors to register. All they have to do is fill out the highlighted area, their name, their address, shirt size, and sign it. Register as a survivor. You want to bring them back here, get them to any team member. We've got them all over the county. We can get our survivors registered because the opening lap is about them. And we thank you for that. Also, we have luminaries that's going to be at 9 o'clock. Anybody that wants to purchase those, there's some forms. Hopefully that's going to be in the newspapers where they can cut it out and send it in so we can get luminaires lit the track so Clay can light lots of candles for us. And then also, I have one poster left, so put it on the board. May 17th, we are caring. And then also, each year, one of our ladies in Askewville has handmade a quilt. I'm throwing them away. We have tickets for sale. Any team member can sell tickets, so please make copies and share them with your community. Whatever is a handmade quilt. All you got to do is buy it for a dollar. It's very beautiful. Miss Esther has been doing that for years for us. Thank you for that. Thank you in advance for hopefully approving a 2019 donation to Relay for Life for our citizens of Bertie County. And as you start your deliberations for 2020 funding, don't forget Relay in there a little bit, please. And please join us May 17th. Bertie County, be there. That's where you need to be. We're going to try to entertain you. People will be cooking. We can feed you. You may have to buy it. But for last year, 2018, that was our 25th anniversary for Relay for Life of Bertie County. Remember, we were first in the state. And for that, we had special honoring of people who have helped us during the 25 years. And we named those the Purple Ribbon Awards. And tonight, for Relay for Life of Bertie County 2018 proudly recognizes Bertie County Board of County Commissioners Purple Ribbon Award for your dedication and support. Thank you all very much. Also, he showed up. Relay for Life of Bertie County 2018 proudly recognized Bertie County Sheriff's Office, John Holly Sheriff and his officers, for a Purple Ribbon Award. You know, they come out there and do security. They offer their cars for our survivors to ride in, and you have agreed to it for this year, right?
Yes.
Call him out the phone.
Y'all heard it. And for our last one, we proudly recognize Bertie County Rescue and Emergency Management Purple Ribbon Award. Because they come out there rescue, hopefully they don't use it, but they're out there. So make sure that they get that. And last, 2018, last November, we had a celebration in Greenville with CENC. That stands for Central and Eastern North Carolina. That covers four markets, relay markets, ACS, American Cancer Society, Greenville, Raleigh, Greensboro to Wilmington. There is a total of 38 community relay events and two college relay events. And during that ceremony for the Central and Eastern North Carolina, Bertie County was number one per capita. And we had raised $226,782 for Bertie County. So we were number one. Herford Yates was number two.
Oh, wow.
And Scotland County was number three. Top teams was Purdue Farms, and they raised $149,099 from their associates, and a lot of that is payroll deductions. Nucor Steel is right on our heels. They were $135,000. And then also, and Purdue was top team in the East for the CENC and Nation with top teams and a team of excellence. So Bertie County has a lot to be proud of. But also, for your trophy case, I have old ones I'm going to make sure you got out there. If they're duplicates, I'll carry them back home. Relay for Life 2018 per capita national award presented to Relay for Life of Bertie County, the $226,000, $10.60 per capita for our population. We were number one for the CENC, and number two in the nation. Cool.
You're not giving him none.
He's got to be quick. So, Commissioner, thank you. This is the award. You need the other
one. Pictures with him.
I didn't want him that timing. You need a trophy case in there.
Put one hand as
one hand. One hand.
Thank you. Come on in.
Come on, Miss Ernstine.
Everybody ready? Smile.
One more.
That's all right. I know who I am.
Thank you.
Joanne, thank you for being here tonight. Thank you for your tirelessly and relentlessly bugging the putty out of everybody about it.
She does a great job.
And I sincerely mean that. You do a wonderful job.
Well, if anybody wants to make a donation tonight, I'd take cash, check.
A motion would be in order.
For the proclamation?
Yes. Move to approve the proclamation.
Second.
Excuse me. I apologize. We need to retake that photo. I had my bad side. Oh, no. We forgot our junior commissioner.
Oh, yes.
You're right.
Yeah.
Please.
Please come up.
Come up.
Yeah, that's right.
That is great. Thank you. Go on in.
Let him hold the plaque.
Let the junior commissioner hold the plaque.
Yeah, that's important.
Come on, Jordan.
Thank you, Joanne. We really do appreciate all of
you. Thank you. Well, thank you,
previous comment. Yes, sir.
Can I ask for a change on the agenda for our out-of-town guests?
Sure, yeah.
I'm going to ask that Steve hold back. We have with us a very special guest with the U.S. Census Bureau. My new colleague, I just came to know last week, Ms. Bernadette Richards, is the U.S. Census Partnership Specialist for Bertie County as we kick off the 2020 census. She brings a lot of energy and enthusiasm. She's here to help highlight some of the activities we might want to be involved with. She met with Brian Buck last week to talk about their role with the Race Commission. Mr. Buck had another engagement that overlapped with this, so he had to run. So I'm delighted that she can come down from Raleigh and be with us too.
Hi, my name is Bernadette Richards, as you mentioned. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad I could help. I said a little prayer.
Good evening again. My name is Bernadette Richards. I'm a partnership specialist with the U.S. Census Bureau. Basically, my role here today is to encourage your county to engage in the 2020 census process. It's beneficial to every county in terms of funding from the government. And to ensure that you are counted and you have accurate count, we have what's called a complete count committee in every county. The governor has dedicated is dedicated to the process and in doing so, he has established a complete commission. And the goal is, if for the 2020 census, is to comp everyone once, only once, in the right place. This is just basically an overview of the history of the census, which was conducted every 10 years since 1790. And this map outlines where states have actually gained or lost or did not have any change in terms of representation in Congress. This is, and it, with North Carolina, is set to gain one more representative in Congress. And that is, the census count is what's gonna actually trigger that. And what's, again, what it is to ensure that every individual within your county is counted. And as I said before, that is beneficial to you. For the mere fact, the more individuals that are represented in terms of the count, the more funding. The funding is the George Washington University did a research in which in $1,632 per capita, meaning per person, is what drives the grant, right, funding or grants. You tonight, you were you're concerned about repairing roads. Again, federal funds. And this is just basically what I just mentioned in terms as to counts matter. It entails money. The more representation you have in terms of number of individual counties within your county, the more accurate your count is, the more funding comes to your county. You're in 20 for the 2005, your response rate, Burton County's response rate was 58%. For the state of North Carolina, it was 69%. In 2010, you had a drastic increase. It went from 58% to 74%. It is the goal to actually attain 80% or better, 80% of your population. The count for 2010 in North Carolina was 76. And this is just basically the cycle in which the process begins. And right now we're at where it says to motivate people to respond. That's where we are. And we've been visiting countless counties and to try in an attempt to establish the Complete Count Committee. And the Complete Count Committee is made up of voices that you feel are trusted voices within your community, such as faith-based organization, individuals that are, or organizations that are, that deals with homeless population. Because what we found is that the homeless population and children under five were undercounted in the 2010 census. We talk about privacy, and there are some concerns where some of people may think that they don't ask for social security number, they don't ask for birthday. But the census information, the data, is released every 72 years, which is a lifetime. So, you know, so we are dedicated in terms of privacy and confidentiality. And again, the Bureau collects a wide array of data surveys. And I made a correction. They do ask for age, sex, marital status, education, housing, and health insurance, and more. And the census data is used in many ways. As I said before, one of the most pertinent ways is that when individuals are writing grants, they want to refer to the census data that was established within their community to justify the need for funding in their community. So that is one way census information is used. And again, it's also used to determine funding for your community from federal federal level. The means in which the census is actually going to be collecting data in 2020 is electronically. That is by internet and phone. You'll receive a document with a barcode, and that barcode establishes your household. And you actually go onto the internet, or you use your phone, or whatever means or source that you have in terms of accessing the internet. You just fill out the information based on that barcode. Also, if one, if we know that there's some concern that, especially with senior citizens, who may not feel comfortable or have the expertise to utilize those modes, we're also, it will also be conducted by phone. And if there is a need to have a census representative come out to the individual house, that will be done. And this is basically the initiative. And again, basically what I just mentioned. On March 12, 2020, is when the when those documents will be mailed out to the household, beginning March 12. And as I mentioned before, our target population are children under 5 years old, because we found under 5 years and under, because they were underrepresented in the 2010 data collection. Veterans, people with disability, homelessness, people in rural America, low income and underserved, senior citizens, migrant farm workers, foreign born immigrants, persons with limited English proficiency, and renters. New construction programs. What the census is actually doing is they on a consistent basis, have made contact with GIS agencies and departments within counties or cities to attain whether there are new addresses that are actually coming online. And the Title 13, again, is just actually the privacy that we have established even among the employees of the U.S. Census. And this is a picture of actually of the Complete Count Commission that is on the state level. As I mentioned before, it's the governor's initiative too, and he has dedicated or committed to ensure that North Carolina is truly represented in the 2020 count. And we met with your county manager in attempt or to implore or to get him to engage in establishing a complete count committee, which, as I said before, would be made up of trusted voices, or should be made up of trusted voices within the community. And it should entail government entities, education, media, minority organization, community organization, workforce development, faith-based institutions, and businesses. And this is just basically asking you to support us. In addition to that, the U.S. Census is currently recruiting. And we're first trying to identify recruiters who actually allow us to recruit what we will call the enumerators and other individuals necessary to execute the 2020 census. And this is not really clear, but these are the several jobs that will be recruited for: the administrative managers, area census office managers, census field manager, IT managers, and again, recruiters. And we'll ask the county to assist us with this process and ensure that we have individuals within your community that may be potentially eligible for these jobs. Any questions?
I have a question. Now, it's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, April 1st, wherever you are, that's where you'll be counted.
April 1st.
Of 2020.
All documents, in terms of with the barcode, that will be mailed on March 12th.
It'll be mailed to each home?
To each home.
Okay. And if you have a child that's in college,
that's where that child is counted. That's where that child is counted.
So I can't tell them to come home that day.
No. That's where that child is counted. And okay. I don't know if you could recall, I think I...
That's
no, right. So if you have that's
because the Wake and the Mecklenburgs and the head of the big universities win again.
But that's where that is where you are on April 1st. But that's where that person is counted. Take for instance, if you have, and for some counties that's an asset because some counties have universities and colleges.
They win again.
And if you have, I mean, this may not be positive, but if you have a penitentiary, they count it where they are.
They need to have a big influx of inmates.
They count it where they are.
And the next question is, how do we get the community involved?
Because
a lot of people who see that in the mail,
that is where the complete committee comes in.
Are we supposed to establish that?
Yeah. And as I said, what you need to do is ensure that you have trusted voice on that committee. Ensure that it's diverse. It's representative of your population. Those individuals should be a representation of what your true population. And their trusted voices. And most of the time, trusted voices are faith-based organizations, churches.
Yeah, so that was my point. Go back to, all of you in the audience, go back and tell your friends, go back to your churches, talk about it in your churches, tell them that we need this census done and we need it done correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to talk about it. I posted a job thing on Facebook today.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so, and I have a lot of followers, so yeah.
Yeah, and again, it's, as I said, just ensure that you have your community on a whole engaged in the process to ensure that you have at least 80% or better.
I have a question for you. You know, as a county, I think we did the right thing. We invested in funds through the Mideast to do the geocoding and things that we had trouble with in the past. Mm-hmm. And that's important for citizens to know because that identifies all of the houses located. We don't know who lives there necessarily, but how many homes on Gett Street, how many on Woodard Road, every house by the geocoding. So we know to mail to every resident, right? So maybe people respond, maybe they don't. But my question was this, in the past, it seems that we didn't send the right people into the right neighborhoods. We sent people into neighborhoods who the people in those neighborhoods did not know. So in our neighborhoods, what we found is if you send somebody in the Indian Woods, if that person is not from Indian Woods, the seniors there, especially when they knock on the door, they don't answer. So we got a lot of that. So I think one of the things we need to make sure is that we get people to go into their own neighborhoods that people know and have confidence in when they go to door to door. Because, I mean, the purpose of the thing is to make sure that we don't have as many of those to do. But that's still where the rubber meets the road, right? The ones that we often miss.
And again, going back to your complete committee, that is one of the tasks, is to identify individuals within your community that is, as I said, truly representative of your community, and ensure that these individuals are known to the community in which they serve.
And in a few minutes, we're going to hear a communication survey
and
report from Dominique, and I'm going to recommend that she staff that.
What I do encourage also, and what other counties have done, They've like something as simple as marketing the 2020 census on water bills and your utility bills and tax bills. They've had, I think it was Gaston County, they actually went out and they dedicated funds for the process and had billboards and they did a wide array of marketing.
Yes, sir.
Y'all are to be commended. Some of the meetings I have sat in on with y'all, we have discussed internet connectivity throughout the county, and that has been a big issue. And obviously, it's important for things like this going on in our future. Is there a crystal ball that y'all have that says this county now has 50%, 75, 90? How many households are connected to the internet? Any idea?
There's a wheel in here that tells you.
But I was at a meeting in
Washington. It doesn't do it by state, but it does it, I mean by county, but it does it by state. There, Camden County, they actually received $1.8 million just for broadband from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Solely for broadband, the infrastructure, everything, $1.8 million. And they were one of 10 counties nationwide to receive those funds. So just having to ensure that you may have someone who could actually do some grant research and begin applying for those funds. But as I said before, the data from the census drives grants. That helps you justify the need for those funds.
To answer the question, though, we are not in very good shape as a county. However, the future looks bright. I mean, Roanoke Electric was one of the first co-ops to get the grant that they have, which is a multi-million-dollar grant to use their wires to do internet, and they've already started that process. That helps. But then we see some examples around us, like in Washington County. They're using, I call it a router, but it's on their buses, and they park their buses in strategic places around the county in the evening. And so households can bounce off. That's right. And they're getting somewhere in almost 80% coverage using that.
Well, you know I'm the drone guy.
I know.
that has been one of the things. There's a company in Raleigh called Precision Hawk, and there are other companies that are exploring that as well, that are putting up these long-term drones that are providing wireless. I don't know how it works. That's beyond my pay grade. But there are lots of, rather than putting in infrastructure and hard cables and things like that, the tendency seems to be going for putting up towers and developing that sort of infrastructure.
Chowan County is, because they are a narrow county, they're using their water towers.
Mount Olive does the Wi-Fi on their water towers.
Mount Olive.
Thank you. Any more questions?
This is my contact information. It's also enclosed in your booklets.
I have a question, so just a comment. The 100%, she said 80%.
Of course everyone would like to obtain 100%. But I mean, if you can do 100%, I said great.
No, but I'm just thinking, how do we determine what that 100% is so we'll know when we get to 80?
What's it based on?
I don't know.
It's based on the geocode. That's why we put a lot of money into the geocode every potential address in the county, right? We know how many addresses where human beings live in this county, whether it's apartment buildings, whether it's a trailer, we got every one of those. Now we think that's 100% universe, right? We don't know how many people live in there, but we got every location.
So is that 80% locations or individuals?
That I don't know, but we don't have individuals. All we have is locations.
And again, that's why it's pertinent to have that complete commission. And to, I don't know if you're about your homeless population, or if you do really have a large homeless population, and you have a continuum of care and homelessness, which is if you receive ESG emergency solution grants or CDG, Community Development Black Grants, to ensure that someone from the COC is actually a part of that community. Because they know where they are. They know where the homeless individuals are. They're the one that actually make contact with them. So, again, that's one means of ensuring you have a public homes. And that will be one means of actually also addressing that homelessness, you know, homeless population.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Steve Biggs with Economic Development.
Good evening. I had 25 pages written here that I was going to go over tonight, but I'm going to back off of that, I promise.
That'll probably be a good, career move.
In other words, how long have I been working here and I count today? Is that what you're saying? I do want to thank you for the opportunity to give you an update. And I do have quite a few things, but I'm going to really go through this. For those of you that don't know, I do want to tell you who, number one, who my board is. Mike Neal is the chairman, Vivian Saunders is the secretary, and the other members are Patricia Ferguson, Mary Davis, Beneva Everett, Marsh Rice, Brasco, Carl Bond, Alan Mazzell, and Louis Hodges. And of course, our newest member, Commissioner Atkins, in case you stepped out or something when they voted to put you on my board.
I actually did. I'm learning this the same time everybody else.
Don't go to the bathroom. Just a quick update on some of the projects that we are working on. We are working on two solar farms. One of them is about 1,000 acres. Had been working on that one for quite a while now, and I'm hoping that the project manager on that can come in and speak to y'all within the next couple of months. They are very close to finishing up their permitting stage. The second farm is quite a bit smaller. It's on the scale of about 100 acres. Speaking of broadband, we are continuing to work with MIDI's Commission and Roanoke Electric. As Commissioner Wesson mentioned, Roanoke Electric is taking the lead in this. MIDI's Commission put together a grant form for a $250,000 CDBG grant. And that will be a trial run up in the Orlando area. You'll never believe government sometimes works in mysterious ways. They had to move a couple of positions of where they were going to put poles, and it was no more than like 20 foot. And we had to go through the whole process again. So we are just now getting some of the money released from the Department of Commerce through CDBGs. But I recently had the opportunity to be introduced to a guy named Eric Kramer, who is president of River Street Networks. If you want to write that down right quick and look it up, they started off out in Wilkes County, and now they are one of the largest internet suppliers in North Carolina. And I said that to say this because they actually started off running Wilkes County's broadband for them, their internet service for them. And now they're doing just all over the county, all over the state, and some in Virginia. They actually came down and talked to Curtis when he was first starting and gave him a little bit of information. They just couldn't quite get together. But there's certain areas of Bertie County that we feel pretty comfortable that Eric can help us with, and we're going to take him up on his offer to come. I emailed everyone about our ECSU tour coming up this Thursday. I'm hoping that I'll send an email out tomorrow with the time on it. I'm hoping that you'll be able to join us because this is something that I hope people like this young fella here and his comrades at school can join in at Elizabeth City State about their new aviation program. I think it's certainly something that my board has voted to get behind. The school board is certainly getting behind it. They're going to be joining us, some of them. Dr. Edmonds is going to be joining us on Thursday. And by the way, it just happened that she is very good friends with Dr. Dixon, who is now the new chancellor there. But the good part about this is it's two separate courses that they have there. One of them is actually on the mechanical side, and the other is on the actual pilot side of this. It's my understanding that a student can get a better degree with more air hours for $50,000 at Elizabeth City State. It's about what this whole package would cost a student, versus $250,000 at a school like Embry-Riddle, which is world-renowned. So ECU has certainly invested a lot of time and money. They're the only aviation school in the UNC system. Project Bunny, you know, we all got to give all these projects a name. This is the one that we talked about in closed session during your retreat. We're continuing to have those talks, and I will update you more as we are able to get more information from the consultant. Project PH Square. This is a pharmacy that I have been working with, along with the people that actually own the shopping center here. We feel real confident that we're going to have a decision within the next month. Feel very, very positive about this. So hopefully, pulling hard for this one. Of course, teacher housing. I'll make this real short. I've got a meeting with the rules chairman, Senator Raven, on March 20th. Enough said about that until we can close that out. Continuing efforts, of course, on tall glass of water. Since we've been talking about that this afternoon for an hour and a half, I did want to let you know, last week I met with Lynn Menges, who is the president and CEO of NC Restaurants and Lodging Association. Lynn used to be head of the North Carolina tourism, but long and short was that one number she stated to me that I found hard to believe, but she had her facts right. It's 55 million people visited North Carolina in 2018. She also showed me some stats that the percentage of tourism growth is normally the same in each county, percentage-wise, as it is statewide. So if the state grows at 3% a year, normally each county in their tourism is going to grow 3% each year. So if you started out low and you moved up 3%, if you started out big, you're going to still move up 3%. So keep that in mind with tall glass of water as we work forward to that, because that's what I spoke with her about, how major a startup of tourism dollars could be for that. Someone mentioned earlier about employment. Purdue and NC DOC, as you well know, that is something that we continually work on. That's just continuing efforts all the time to help them find new people. But one effort that we have got going on is a new website called Ramp East that we are working with. I keep pointing back because he was sitting here earlier. We're working with Mideast Commission to hopefully get that up and running very soon. And long and short of Ramp East is it is strictly for manufacturing. It will not be for Burger King and Subway and all these other places. It will just be for manufacturing in Eastern North Carolina. And so what will happen is, as the developers go through their manufacturing companies doing their existing industry visits, if they've got several openings, we will put them in contact with the right person that they can send that ad to, and it, again, it will just be for manufacturing. And then what happens is, when someone goes to apply for jobs at the employment office, as I like to call it, still like to call it that, they will be led to, if they are interested in manufacturing, they will be led to this one website. And one application will go to every one of these jobs that they're actually qualified for. So it'll be a one-stop shop for manufacturing jobs. I mentioned earlier NC Outdoors, that is one big push that the governor's got going on with David Knight. We continually work with to improve Tri-County Airport, continually working on peanut belt RPOs. I know y'all are talking about a different scenario, but you know, our highways and byways are dear to us, and we want to make sure we get our fair share of that. I also represent you on the Highway 17 board, and we are constantly working on Interstate 87 with US 17 and 64. 17 and 64 have combined their associations, so we're in decent financial shape, not great, but decent. And again, working very hard on I-87. The main reason for US 17 that I really like besides I-87 is, you know, we're right in the middle of the ports. We're in the middle from Norfolk to Morehead City. We're right in the middle. So, you know, I hope that it won't be long I can come to you to see if we can secure money, not from y'all, but secure some monies for a new industrial park. And maybe even a spec building one day, because I can promise you it's hard to sell out of an empty basket. But we need to work a little more on workforce development before that happens. We're still trying to locate companies at Golden Peanut Building and Perry Manufacturing. In here I put lost efforts. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. In this particular case, we lost. We had a company that was coming, well, a husband and wife team that were coming here from Wisconsin. They sold their business there and wanted to buy the old Bobby warehouse, and we're going to make an inn and a farm-to-table restaurant. And unfortunately, at the very last, the state has these crazy rules that if your garage is not attached to your house and you're going to use that as rooms, then you got to sprinkle everything. Don't have to sprinkle it if it was attached. And this was, you know, 10 or 12 foot away. Numbers were just going to be astronomical. Threw it completely out of kilter for them to make money. Also last week I met with John Loyack. John is the Vice President of Global Business Services for the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. And along with him, I met with Melissa Smith, who is the Vice President of Business Recruitment, talking to both of them about, you know, anything that EDPNC can do to help us. You know, we were certainly looking for that to happen. And, you know, I used to always talk about site selection consultants that we work with over the years. And I have found out that they're really not site selection anymore. They're referred to as site elimination. And what happens, as in a lot of positions, these people reach for the low fruit. So if they can go to the triangle or the triad or something like that and show a client 50 buildings, or they can go west and drive all day and drive half the night coming back and show them two buildings and the same thing in the east, then what are they going to do? They're going to stay in the triangle, the triad, or the Charlotte region. So we really have to work to show our wares. I also spoke last week with the president of Community College, Dr. John Hans, about, you know, our efforts here on training and retraining. And again, I hope Thursday you will see through the Elizabeth City State University tour about the SPTDC that has helped several businesses here in Berkeley County and are looking to help others. I'm open to any questions. I know y'all will give out, and you probably got some. If you do, you want to contact me later, that's fine, but I'm open.
I want questions, Steve, but I'll just say to any of those who are on Roanoke Electric, and you want to know when their internet service would be available to you, look on their site. They have a map that tells you how soon it will be to your community.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Dominique Walker, the Assistant to the County Manager with Berkeley County Communications Survey Report.
Good thank you for your time today. My name is Dominique Walker, Assistant Town County Manager. I have for you just a report of my Bertie County Communication Survey that was conducted over a five-month period. I have the survey to pass out for you, as well as some additional project is to analyze and understand how residents receive general county information that includes services, updates, events from Bertie County, and to also recommend to the board other methods to increase citizen engagement. So an overview, it's a 7-question survey that was administered over a 5-month period from October to February. I had a total of 261 responses that were distributed in person, online, by text message, and by email. That was also distributed to different faith-based churches in the county as well. So the first question was, how often do you receive general information regarding events, services, and updates? 32% of respondents said they sometimes receive general information. 28% said that they rarely receive information. And 21% said that they often receive information from the county. So the second question was I wanted to know how did they receive information. So 82% of residents here said that they received information by word of mouth, by friend, or by family. So when I first started here, the big question that I had asked was that, and I was just told that sharing information verbally was the best way people found they got information from the county. 71% of participants said that they received their news from the Bertie Ledger and the News and Herald. 59%, around 60%, said that they received it from watching television. And 44% said that they received information from Facebook. And then the last big portion said that they received information from robocall. So most of my respondents came from the Windsor area. I had 12% that came from the Lewis and Woodville area and about 10% from the Coleraine area. So most of the base was here in the county seat. 70% of my respondents were identified as women and 30% identified as male. Fifth question, I was asking age. So had 64% said, or 64 people had said that they were between the ages of 55 and 64. So as you know, we have older population. So I had a high percentage of individuals between 45 and 74 years old. Ethnicity. Was the second, was sixth question, 63% identified as African American and 34% identified as white. And so the last question, what we really wanted to know was, what information do you think would be helpful to receive from the county? So it gets a little confusing, but I put the top 10 items that people wanted to see more information from the county. That includes Recreation was the highest percentage. Recreation programs, cooperative extension programs, library programs, voter information, solid waste and recycling, special or community events, weather alerts, board vacancies, new initiatives from the county, as well as the county budget. Also what's on here as well is transit, weather, emergency, road closure and other major infrastructure issues, government issues that will that affect the county, as well as some broadband information as well. So in the recommendation portion I have, as the county continues to move forward with new initiatives, including tall glass of water, Site X, the 2020 census, some of the recommendations is just are what they are, just suggestions and moving forward with some of these projects that the county has. That includes increasing advertisement, not only for recreation, cooperative extension, library programs, border information, cycling, solid waste and recycling, and citizen awareness and engagement, but also the PR piece for Site X, tall glass of water, as well as the 2020 census. Engaging in new initiatives and pilot programs that target citizen engagement. So some of the information that I provided to you are just some resources that I was able to research and bring before the Poverty Commission that target citizen engagement using mobile devices. So for example, CityBot is currently being operated in Charleston County, South Carolina, where there is residents have there is a 7-digit number that residents can text their issues to, and the person, people behind the board, respond to those to that individual's issues to in a fast 24-48 hour time response. Gov2Go is also another pilot program that is currently being researched as well, that is being utilized throughout the United States. North Carolina, if the county was to entertain Gov2Go, Bertie County would be the first in North Carolina to utilize this service. Another recommendation I have is just to increase online presence to distribute county information and encourage participation. The board county does a really great job on their Facebook page. My recommendation would be to increase your social media presence, either by using other platforms such as Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, which you guys are already on.
Chat or whatever it's called.
Snapchat? Yes, Snapchat. You can actually do Snapchat. And the last recommendation I have is just to target specific organizations, departments, churches, etc. to push county information. So recreation programs was the biggest percentage I had for residents wanting to receive information. So with some of the projects that are coming out with the county that are tailored to recreation, just pushing that information out through that particular department. Also, some of your more community stakeholders, such as your churches and other institutions. And that's all I have. Any questions, comments? Yes.
I thank you for doing this presentation, because when you're in it, I didn't realize didn't know what we were doing. You know, I kind of thought people knew that we have the press here every meeting. We are constantly putting it on Facebook, but it's good to know that we need to work on this area. We need to get out to the churches or wherever we need to go and make sure our voice is heard, because I think that is one of our weaknesses. People don't know what we're doing. So I appreciate that. And I want to hear more. I know I was in the meeting and we talked about CityBot, but I think it would be good if we try to implement it, because that's another way for information to get out. Yeah.
I'm surprised that recreational was at the top of the list, giving the age group that mostly responded. Yeah. But that was interesting.
One thing that I, to your point with the elder population that I have been told in conversations with our recreation team, is the need that some of the senior citizens would like to have in terms of being able to exercise and having that opportunity to be able to utilize those particular like equipment or space to be able to work out in. So to your point, yeah, that was also a shock.
You know, we don't have it countywide, but our Council on Aging does a great job.
Great job.
With line dancing classes.
Mm-hmm. I would love, you know, since we're talking about the age groups, I would love to hear what Junior Commissioner Joyner had to say.
Okay. Well, thank you for waking me up. Glad I don't have school tomorrow. Been still with the big kids. Anyway, to me, it looks like, and refresh my memory because I saw your mouth move, I heard some words, but when you have school and you have like a bunch of projects going on at once, it's hard to keep up with a big project. So, inform me one more time. This is about how people become informed, correct? Okay. So, number one, I am surprised that the elderly people, well, I don't call them elderly. I call them experienced people when they get out there, have a good time. I guess you don't. If you're old, you can still go, well, I guess. Anyway, I believe that the young people don't really and truly become involved with this, more so to speak, because we don't believe, well, it's not that we don't believe, but we don't know that this affects us in this manner. As a matter of fact, out of my whole school, I would say between only me and my alternate, forgive her for not being here, she had an emergency that she had to take care of. But between me and my alternate, I would say that only us, we two, and our SDA members know how this really affects us as a whole or as a generation to speak of. So I believe that if we really and truly want to embrace the change that I know is coming, and everyone in here knows it is coming, I don't care how much you try to run, I don't care how much you try to hide, it's going to come one day. We need to be able to get that out there to all people. I don't care if you are 2, like my nephew, or if you are 17, 18, 66, 102 even. You need to know that this is going to affect you more than what is really given. And if people are on it almost like they are on these roads, well, by golly, we will have a very big influx.
That's right.
Thank you for your comment.
The program that I really like is the city, like Commissioner Baseman, the city bot thing, because we have talked about many times having a way for citizens to call in or ask a question and get a response from county government, right? This is a great deal because, I mean, as commissioners, we all hear, we get calls at home, stopped at a grocery store, and a lot of times we don't have the answer right there, right? But there would be a central place, a quick way of saying, call this number and leave a message or via internet, and someone would get back within 48 hours or whatever with a response, or even if it's to say, we don't know, we'll investigate it. But it would do a lot to inform, sit and answer their specific questions about things. Yeah, I really like that. That's a nice thing.
Thank you for
your time. Thank you. Miss Payne, I don't know where you had to drive from. Is there anything we can do to help get you moving, or are you just...
Oh, I'm learning a lot.
Okay. Are you just hanging out with us now? Is that right? I just wanted to make sure you didn't have to drive a long way.
She crossed the border. She crossed the river.
Okay. All right. All right. Next, we have Jody Ray, our tax administrator, with the 2018 tax report.
Good to see you quick. Much of this is going to be on the consent agenda. In the A6 in your packet, you'll notice a 26-year chart of our collection rate from 1992-93 to the 2017-2018 tax year. For 2017-18, our collection rate was 97.29. That's the highest it's ever been.
Congratulations.
Been 26 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. The second highest by chance was 96.44 in 13-14. Won't get 100%, but we're going to get as close as we can. On your consent agenda, items 7 and 8 you'll go over in a little bit, is my required report for unpaid taxes for 2018-19, as well as an order to advertise. I guess I'll wait for the end. Do y'all have any questions on that? Since we ain't got this in the agenda yet. And item number 9, we'll discuss the establishment of the Board of E&R. That's my report right now.
And that date coincides with your regular meeting.
Do we have any? No.
No. Yeah, we're still required to have it.
Okay.
That's right now, though. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. That brings us to board appointments. My agenda says voluntary agricultural district board, and I'm not sure.
We have four persons who are seeking to be reappointed. Mr. Curtis Brown, Shelby Castello, Herbert Taylor, and Carl Bond. They are all eligible for reappointment.
Move to approve. A second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. All right. Moving to the consent agenda. Do y'all want to do this all in one motion, or do you want to go through each one individual, or do you have an individual one that you'd like to separate out?
I say take them all. Yeah.
Do you want a minute to read over them?
I'm ready. I make a motion that we approve items 1 through 16 on the consent agenda.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Commissioners' reports.
How about discussion agenda?
Sorry, did I miss something?
Yeah, D1.
Yes, I did. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. I would like to add two items, because this will be
sure.
Not a question. But one would be the Rural Business Development Grant, because I think it's due March 29th and we won't meet again. And I just want to know where are we with the assistant county manager.
On the grant for the Rural Business Development, that is available for existing and startup businesses. If anyone has a suggested group that may be interested or an entrepreneur, we can certainly make that available for them. On the assistant county manager position, the closing date is 22nd of this month. And as of noon today, there were two applications already in Carolyn's office.
Scott, on the grant, I mean, is it too late for us to publicize that grant so that, because the problem I have is that most businesses don't hear about it through word of mouth, or even if they went to the site to see it. Do we still have time to publicize that to make businesses aware of it? I mean, I think we need to do that, because where we missed on the other grant, which I got hit on, I don't know about anybody else, but that we never put it out there for businesses or nonprofits to know that the grant was available. I think we should always do that if we can.
So and could we also send it out to the various municipalities?
Sure.
The Rural Business
Development. Mm-hmm. That tall glass of water. Proposed action plan for project implementation to include community vision, temporary access, planning and grant preparation, consulting services.
This may warrant a special work session, but I want you to know we've been listening, we've been hearing. When are we going to get access? When are we going to have a plan? Steve has spent a lot of time with Ms. Payne developing in this, but we're going to be ready to go very, very soon. So be thinking about persons that you might want to serve on a steering committee, advocacy board, but certainly we need input from the governing body. She's got a couple of proposals about working with the board on some very specific tasks, like the branding exercise, which I think you will all really find beneficial.
I wish that we, because we know how limited time is in this kind of meeting, But on the work session, we can include that in work session where we can really get into this and really put some time on it. Would be wonderful.
I just wanted y'all to have it in your hands because we just got this one.
Right. Thanks.
Anybody have anything to say about that?
Don't y'all put that on the back of
Commissioner's reports.
Let's put like Commissioner Baseball on another commissioner when she's done.
It happens. Apparently.
Under the commissioner's report, I had the opportunity last week, before last, I think it was now, to go to the alcohol forum meeting that they had in Raleigh. And I was there along with approximately 100 other people, and many of those, that 100, were legislators that were sitting in the room. And it was all about our ABC system and what we're going to do about our ABC system, whether or not we were going to privatize it or not privatize it. I think the legislators, if they heard what I heard, they're not going to be so interested in the whole privatization. As when I first walked into the meeting, I was all for privatizing. But hearing what I heard that day changed my mind completely. They started off the day telling us about the sales of alcohol and how they have grown and will continue to grow. And then they wanted us to take a look at Washington State and how they have privatized and things are not going well for Washington State. So I've left my note somewhere that I was going to speak on, and so I can't bring it all to my mind now of what all was spoke on, but I did change my mind sitting in that room, and I feel like the legislators that were in that room heard the same thing I did, so I feel pretty confident that maybe they will not go private with the ABC system. This coming Friday, I will be at a criminal justice, the first annual criminal justice summit. I got invited because I serve as chair of our North Carolina Association's Justice and Public Safety Steering Committee. So I'm excited about attending that, and so I'll be giving a report on that next time I come. This coming Saturday, Pilesville will be celebrating 100 years. We have a resolution, and if the chairman would ask for a vote on that resolution, I would really appreciate it. The resolution is just recognizing that they are 100 years old, and that starts at 10 o'clock, so if any of you are interested in attending that, it should be a good day full of activities.
I guess before we move forward, do we need to... You're asking for
I make a motion that we adopt the resolution for Pilesville.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Thank you. Yes.
Commissioner Wesson?
Yeah, just a couple of things. First of all, I want to thank the citizens for allowing the county managers who were able to go to the legislative session of county commissioners from all over the United States in Washington, D.C. last week. It's a great opportunity not just to get additional training, to learn from other initiatives that are working all around the country, but the best part is always to meet with our elected officials one-on-one, Butterfield, Burr, Tillis, and find out, you know, listen to what they have to say, but also get them to listen to us and what our needs are. So it's always good in that respect. So thank you. I have in front of my commissioners and a couple going around to the public. If there are any left over there, Gene, you can pass them around. But this is from the Mideast Commission. You've heard a lot about the Mideast Commission in the session today. Well, you know, I've served on that committee for since I've been a commissioner, so now I've kind of worked my way up. I am the Secretary Treasurer of the Mideast Commission. And in a few days, I will be the Vice President of the Mideast Commission. And I can tell you, when we first started, I'll give you an example. I remember the first year I came on, Berkshire County had two funded projects from the Mideast Commission. and Beaufort County had 28. Give you an example, we were the lowest number of funded projects. Now, we have the second highest number of funded projects on the Mideast Commission that we've been able to take advantage of. Thanks in large part to Scott when we did the workers who could come in and do, you know, clear ditches and do a lot of work for us and, you know, around the disaster stuff. And we've hired other people through them and we've taken advantage of their programs because we are aware of what they have to offer, right? So I look forward to that. This is a labor report from them. And I want the citizens to see this. And it shows all five counties in this, in the Mideast Commission, Beaufort County, Bertie County, Hertford, Martin, and Pitt. And this is the last results on the back page, show all the employment figures. In November of 18, we were only at 4.4% unemployment in this county. A year ago, from that date, November of 17, we were 6% unemployment. We've lowered that employment, 1.6%. That means almost 150 less people are unemployed in Bertie County over that year. We only have 339 unemployed people, according to this report, out of the 7,739 workforce in Bertie County. So we have done a great job of making sure, and we have a lot of opening jobs, almost 80 positions, I think, Steve, at the Department of Corrections.
96.
Purdue has God knows how many.
Sure.
So they make, you know, those two jobs may not be something for everybody, but we have jobs in Bertie County, and we can put people to work. It also shows that, you know, what are the top hiring firms in the region for us. I won't call them out, but there's a lot of great statistics on where we stand. Now, right now, our unemployment at 4.4 is only 0.1% ahead of Beaufort County. We are lower than Hertford County. We are even with Martin County, 4.4%, and Pitt is the best in the region. They're 3.7. But we are extremely competitive around jobs in this county. That's the story that's not known to most folks. That story is not known. We've done a great job from 6% to 4.4 in a year. So, and we've actually been lower than that. In September, we were only 3.9%. We had a business to close that threw a few people back out, but we've done a great job on that end. So that's it for me.
Thank you, Mr. Russell. Mr. Baysmore.
Yes, I would like to say that while in D.C., there was a lot of discussion about expansion of Medicaid and also broadband. And they know the urgency of us needing broadband here. And everyone has agreed to help it and help Bertie County and other rural areas with broadband. So there is a new initiative coming out to do this. They also passed out, and I'm laughing because you can download it on your phone, Apple and Google, Android. Test it. It's T-E-S-T, capital I, capital T. And it tests your broadband. At home, it's very low. FCC, the incoming and out, it's low. I come to the county office, I said, let me see what's here, because I live out in the country. And it really just turned me. So I don't know whether it's not hitting a tower or what, but this is good to check your broadband wherever you are. You just download it, and you can check the strength of your internet.
You might feel cold.
Yeah, that might be it.
Some folks like to download stuff on our public Wi-Fi. So we try so not to make it so free.
Yeah. It won't.
The hamster gets tired.
Yes. Sometimes I download stuff
it's
on our
internet. Because I've already downloaded, but I was testing my speed.
Uh-huh.
And it would not let me test
it. It may not be as ideal.
You put my little thumb that on my phone.
Oh, we got a flip. Yeah, we got a flip coming back. And also,
don't talk her into a smartphone, please. Because you're looking at the IT guy.
I don't want to.
And we also talked about the census. Some way we have to get, when people get the cards in the mail, we have to find a way for people to fill it out. Because I know every now and then I'm guilty of seeing junk mail and toss it. So we have to let them know the importance of this. And I'm thinking about maybe with another town hall meeting that we could do that and share and invite all of the ministers in the county so they may share with their people, because this is very, very important.
We missed our opportunity at the Black History Celebration with all those ministers there.
Wow. But I believe it's very important and we need to definitely work on that. And on that CCC group, I think you said Dominique will be working with them.
She'll be our staff, but we're just beginning to start.
Okay.
You could do probably a reverse 911 if you want. I realize it's not
the robo calls.
Part of the emergency system.
That's a good idea.
We use it on the time, too.
Yeah, we use it for other things, so that's a great idea. Yeah. Thank you.
It's a great idea.
Especially when it comes that time, maybe two or three in that month.
Yeah.
It's a great idea. Works too.
Thank you. County manager's report.
I'm done.
You're done. Okay. County attorney's report.
No, sir.
This brings us back to our public comment section at the end of the meeting. Again, I'll...
Junior commissioner.
Oh, yes.
Okay. I don't have it on here, but yes. Junior commissioner's report. Thank you.
First, I want to go back to this road provision. This is the last time I'm going to speak on this road provision because I see how much time that took up. Actually, I was over there counting the minutes. It took like 30, 40 minutes. But anyway, at best, I would say that deal is mediocre because it needs some slight tweaking. Because you need teeth. Trust me. Out here, you're going to need some teeth. Didn't mean to sound country, but you're going to need some tea for it. But anyway, so first, what is a lien, if I'm allowed to ask that question? What is a lien? Because I don't study law. I don't have any property as of yet. But what is a lien?
You want to take
lawyer recommendation.
Sure. A lien is when you establish a claim to somebody else's property to enforce some sort of right, for example. You got run over on the way home by a bus and a suit, and you could actually put a lien against the company that owned the bus. Tax liens. There are ways to specifically enforce rights.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. So now that I know what a lien is, which that kind of makes a little bit more sense now. But anyway. So, if I heard correctly, and I've sat here and I've seen both sides, I actually tried to put myself in both positions, which I apply anyone to do that, but from either way, it looks like we're going to have problems either way with them, unless we can come to a compromise. Now, the way that I would go about it, which you can take the suggestion, if you don't want to, hey, that's fine with me. Send out a survey to not only property owners and not only tenants, as I would use the word, but to everyone in the county, because on Wikipedia, well, I shouldn't trust Wikipedia, but anyway, on the internet it says we have around about 19,000, 20,000 people in this county. Of those people, which I can't really include myself because I live on the highway. I hear 18 wheels coming all night. But anyway, I live on the highway, so I don't really have this problem. But still, I believe that a survey is needed. You need a little bit more research before we can go and jump into this ant pile, which we're getting ready to do. Otherwise, we're going to end up like me when I was 5 and I jumped into an ant pile. They ate me up. Didn't think wrong. Couldn't walk for days. Anyway. And also, we have the private roads. I don't know if trailer parks are included in that, but we have that overseen. But what are we going to do
about these public roads. Because I live in Colerain, a place of, as I have described it to my teacher, hills and swamps. And when it rains, it pours, and when it pours, boy, does it flood. As a matter of fact, on the, I believe the name of it is Rosemead or Northmore. If you go far enough down in that road, there are certain points in that road where you will literally have to pray to God and dip into the other lane and pray that nothing is coming, because parts of that road sit dead in the middle of the swamp. Parts of that road, I have seen them come patch it one day, and the next day, it is literally a deeper hole than what it was before. Same problem with Glover's Crossroad. Down there, we have places in the road where the road literally sinks into the ground. And you will, again, have to jet into that other oncoming lane and pray that nothing is coming. So what do we have in place to do about that? Because I believe that this is a good, don't get me wrong, this is needed. Because no, let me tell you something. Life is precious. It is a gift, a divine gift, to be given life. As a matter of fact, that's why I hate to go to nursing homes. I hate to go to funerals, because I hate to have, and trust me, I hate using the word hate to, but I just like to have that feeling, knowing that life has been deprived from an individual. I absolutely despise that feeling. So this is needed, but I believe that we need some more insight. We need some more facts. We need to get the smoke out of the mirror so we can see clearly. There's no need to jump into a fire that you don't need to jump into. And that's just facts. Next, I would say that with this broadband internet, we're going to need that, because if you have noticed, my generation knows almost everything about that little iPhone that I have here in this pocket of mine. Literally, they can entertain themselves for hours at a time. So we are going to need that if you want to conduct the census, and if you really and truly want to connect with children my age and younger. Oh, you're going to need some Wi-Fi. That's the only way that you're going to get their attention. Television doesn't even catch their attention anymore. And that's sad. But that's what I grew up on. Other than that, everything else is as it is. It should be running fine. And again, please excuse my alternate. She asked me to come and beg for her excuse, because she did not know that family emergency was going to pop up, and she thought they had resolved it better too. But hey, life is fine.
Thank you.
Do you want to address the thing about state roads?
Yeah, well, you had a great question about the highways. In North Carolina, the highways don't belong to the county. The highways belong to the state, DOT. So in North Carolina, the paved roads you see don't belong to us, which means we have no consent, no control over what's done. However, we do have a local DOT, and they have a priority list of, you know, their projects for the year. And some of the same places that you mentioned are known to them, and there's some that are worse. And I know, like in my district, down Wooded Road at the little bridge, for years and years, every time it rains hard, it used to flood. And finally, we got that addressed somewhat. They raised the bridge, but now that so much water's been let out of the road, we still flood. So, but that is the state's responsibility. Now, we can, you know, make sure they are aware, as you say, of instances that we have. The difference with the other roads that we talked about, and I appreciate what you said, is that, you know, the citizens don't have anybody else to go to other than us. You know, they can't go on that road, on a private road, and make the improvements themselves. They can't touch it. They don't own it, right? And even if they could, is that fair? Because they, you know, they paid for a lot. They paid for access to their road, so. But, you know, I mean, I just kind of feel like, I just speaking for myself, 2012 is a long time ago. We studied this thing six ways to Sunday. To me, it's time to do something. And that doesn't mean that that will solve every problem and every situation. But I got to feel like it will solve most of it. And that will give us a long way. But that's why we have a board, and that's why we take a vote. So, you know, we'll see how it works out.
We clearly got some different opinion on the board. I don't just Commissioner Wesson to have the last word and allow y'all to have an opportunity.
Dang, man, I thought I had the last word.
Good.
That's a good Tara. Good question.
All right. Don't say you weren't given an opportunity. Okay. All right. Back to our public comments section. I'll remind you there's a 3 minute time limit, which we will probably strictly adhere to at this point.
But I've got to tell you something. $200 come with first place. $200 bucks come with, but it cost me $100 to get.
I'll be real quick and short. This process has really been eye-opening to me. The Bible says to give honor to who honor is due. And everybody sitting in this little horseshoe here is due a great deal of respect and honor for the work that y'all put in, dedicated to do the work of this county. And I thank you for that, and I'm sure that my words are echoed in other people here. We may be on opposite sides of the coin, and that's all right. But y'all, the amount of work that you put in, people don't know about it. They don't know about, I kept talking about the full agenda tonight. They don't know that there's 186 pages that was dumped on y'all in a couple of days ago to study and to know. In addition to your travels in Washington and you're going to Raleigh, and I don't know what kind of undercover assignment you might have been on. Your board assignments and things that you're involved with. You've got a great staff, and I, for one, thank you for your service, thank you for your time and what you do. And know this, I don't care if nobody else in this county prays for you, you're prayed for in my household every day for knowledge, wisdom, and abilities to be revealed to you and how you conduct yourself and the issues that you do. So I'll shut up.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Is there any further business? That being said, we stand adjourned.
Yeah. Thank you. Good job. Hey, great.